Education Policy Committee is calling it to order right now. Could members and audience members please take their seats? We got a really full agenda today. I'm not even sure we have a quorum yet, but since we don't, what I really want to do was first do something I should have done at our last meeting, which was, one, welcome everybody back, and two, have our new staff introduce themselves, which was my bad. So, yes.
Hi, my name is Alyssa Fritz, and I am the committee administrator for the Education Policy Committee, as well as Early Childhood Finance and Policy.
And yes, we did steal her from HHS as the CLA, which I'm very happy about. So,
My name is Megan Adiola. I'm the new CLA for Ed Policy.
Very happy to have her on board as well. And then we also have two pages helping us out today. We don't know who our permanent page is going to be yet, but we have Adrian Ali Kakamo, almost had it, and Bretta Boyton over there. So thank you for both being here, and hopefully we get to retain at least one of you because education is fun. So let's see here. It looks like, do we have quorum? Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, we have in the audience some who've been shadowing us today. I'm not sure if you had a shadow, but they're from FCCLA, which, you know, we provide a third of their funding. And I thought it would be good if we either got to introduce them or if at least they could stand.
Well,
so up to you, Madam Chair.
Representative, I did not have anybody shadow me today, so why don't you go ahead?
Okay, well, I'll start with my shadow. It's Amber Findlay. And if she would stand up in the audience, there she is. Now, what's unique about her is she's a sophomore, but she's also already won a national award in the projects that they do. So this is fantastic. And her father served in this house in the early 80s.
Oh, wow. Wonderful.
So it's great to have her. And I don't know any of the others other than her sisters in the audience. Maybe she could stand, but I would imagine there might be other members.
Yeah, or maybe we'll just have all, have a really tight agenda.
Why don't they all stand?
But Representative Christensen, did you have somebody that was following you today?
Thank you for bringing that up. I have Holly Van Andy, and she's from Badger, Minnesota. So she's about up to the Canadian border. She's got to go today.
And then we'll make it really quick. So first, Representative Kunesh-Podein, Mueller.
Great. I had James. James, would you stand up? James comes from the Hermanville area and comes from a class of 19. 12. So he is a jack of all trades, let me tell you, the things that he's active in. So thank you for joining us today.
Representative Mueller.
Supriya Patel is shadowing me today, and she is a junior at Spring Lake Park High School.
Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have Jennifer from Wheaton, and she is in a class of 30.
Wow. Representative Scott.
Thank you. I have Kimberly Pyle, and she's from Apple Valley.
Wonderful. Representative Grunhagen.
I have Rowan. He's from Grand Meadows. And he's in the sixth grade.
Ooh.
Seventh.
Representative Wasley.
And I have Rachel. She's up from near Canada as well, and she's a sophomore.
Anybody else? And I know earlier today I spoke to a wonderful group of a packed room full of students here from alternative learning centers. So I don't know if any of them are in the audience, but if they're, they can stand up as well. It was a great discussion. So we are going to move on, though. We have a quorum, and we have minutes in front of us. May I have a motion to approve the minutes for Tuesday, February 18th?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Mueller moves approval of the minutes for Tuesday, February 18th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. The motion prevails, and the minutes for the Tuesday, February 18th meeting are approved. So, as you can see, we have a very full house, so we're going to move right away to the first bill, and we have Representative Kunesh-Podein's bill. Members, we heard a lot of this testimony when we moved this bill last year, but there have been some changes, so I thought it was very important to have the advocates come in again and have Representative Kunesh-Podein walk folks through it again, because we did have a new house file number. So, Representative Kunesh-Podein, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Chair. I would like to move House File 3201 to
be re-referred.
Thank you.
Education Finance.
Thank you. To be re-referred to Education Finance.
Representative Kunesh-Budin moves House File 3201 to be re-referred to Education Finance Division, or Committee, I should say now. And members, the author does have an amendment in front of us that she'd like to have put on to put the bill in the order she'd like. Did you want to briefly explain the A1 amendment?
Sure. So this amendment addresses a few of the clarifications and technical fixes to put this bill in order.
Wonderful. So members, we have the A1 amendment before us. Representative Kunesh-Budin moves the A1 amendment. Any further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Kunesh-Budin, would you like to start your testimony?
Yes, please. Thank you, Madam Chair. Very excited to be back again this year and presenting to you some more pieces and components to the Increased Teacher of Color Act, 2.2, I guess you could call it. Last year, we were able to put some legislation in place so that we are increasing the number of teachers in our classrooms that reflect our actual populations and diversity of our classroom. This bill for 2020 focuses on updated amendments from the existing E12 program that were proposed in the 2019 Increased Teachers of Color Bill. And last year we had some really significant bipartisan support in the House and was included in the House Omnibus Bill. Just like last year, this bill is going to strengthen the existing program because we're really working hard to attract, prepare, and retain our teachers in order to increase the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota. It also promotes many changes to the system to help close the opportunity and the achievement gaps for our students. This is a result of many, many stakeholders by the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. And I really want to thank them for their perseverance and their passion and their commitment to this. And that also includes a number of state agencies and administering grant programs. There are a number of sections, and in your package, you should have this handout that will really give you a good visual idea of what we want to do this session. In our E12 policy and finance, we have a number of bullet points there. We'd like to establish a state goal to increase the percentage of Tokiat each year. So currently we're at 4%. And we want to make sure that we are reaching that teaching force that reflects our K-12 students. It also requires a biennial accountability report from PELSB. I think that's important that we have that. It also creates a statute to expand and strengthen the Grow Your Own programs with additional pathways for non-licensed employees, parents, secondary students, and opens eligibility for districts throughout the state. It requires district plans under the world's best workforce and achievement and integration statutes to ensure that the curriculum, the learning, and the work environments are inclusive and respectful of all racial and ethnic groups. And the achievement and integration program is also strengthened to address opportunity and achievement gaps. This bill also requires the testing company offering licensure exams to provide more support for our candidate success, and that includes monthly untimed testing opportunities, waiving those testing fees for low-income test takers, and providing a full-length practice test for each of those exams. And the last thing that it'll do is proposes additional one-time funding for three different grant programs: Grow Your Own, Teacher Mentorship and Retention, and Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Education of Color. And then on the right side of that, of this table, you'll see in coordination with some of the higher ed amendments that we are also asking for. So we've had really strong stakeholder support in this program. As a teacher myself, I look forward to the ever-expanding
programs that are going to bring teachers that are well-qualified, teachers of color that reflect our students' culture and ethnicity, and ask for your support today. We do have a few folks that are here to speak to this bill, and if that's all right, Madam Chair, I will begin calling them up.
Sounds good, and I see you have a few different groups. I want to start with State Ethnic Councils and Indian Affairs Council.
That would be great.
I can always pull some of those end chairs over.
Sure. We will have Shannon Gieschik from Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, Jasmine Carey from the Council for Minnesota of African Heritage, Samantha Diaz from the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs, and Andrew Morris from the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans.
Wonderful. And if each of you, when you come up to the microphone, to state your name for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair Joachim and members. My name is Jasmine Carey, and I am the Policy and Legislative Director for the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. We are here to share a united message from the three state ethnic councils and the Indian Affairs Council in strong support of the Increased Teachers of Color Act, HF 3201, as shared in our joint letter to the committee. Madam Chair and members of the committee, as state agencies, we have the important role to advise and inform state lawmakers about our constituent communities and their needs. Currently, students of color and American Indian students represent 34% of all students in Minnesota, while teachers of color and American Indian teachers still only represent 4% of all teachers. Thus, since 2017, the top priority in education, uniting our four councils, has been the need to increase the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota. Addressing this severe shortage is a key to narrowing our state's persistent achievement gap and opportunity gaps by disproportionately impact our constituents and our communities.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Shannon Gieschik. I currently serve as the Executive Director for the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. We thank this committee for its commitment to the issue and full support on last year's Increased Teachers of Color Act. Like last year's bill, House Floor 3201 will strengthen policy for state investments and address systemic barriers to recruiting, preparing, and retaining teachers of color and American Indian teachers. It is a result of a continued strong partnership among our four councils and the coalition to increase teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota. It is a comprehensive set of policy proposals informed by feedback from hundreds of parents, students, educators, and others from our community over the past 3 years. It aligns and supports the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council's mission of protecting tribal sovereignty and ensuring the well-being of all American Indian citizens in the state of Minnesota. We appreciate the leadership demonstrated by Madam Chair, Representative Hunesh Podine, Representative Kosnick, and the many co-authors of this bill this year and supporters of the efforts over the previous several years, for their bipartisan legislation to address the severe shortage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in our state.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Andrew Morris, and I serve as the Public Affairs and Legislative Liaison at the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. The councils, our communities, and the coalition have a sense of urgency on this issue, as our students' learning continues to be impeded by structural and systemic challenges as evidenced by the state's wide opportunity and achievement gaps. Research has clearly demonstrated that all students benefit from diverse teachers. Research is also clear that these gaps have narrowed for students who are of color or American Indian who have teachers that reflect their diverse backgrounds. We must be responsive to their needs. Together, we can and must change the trajectory for these students.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Samantha Diaz, and I'm the Legislative and Policy Director in the area of education at the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. Simply, if we are to expect different results in our effort to narrow our achievement and opportunity gaps, we must do things differently and intentionally as a state. In this regard, House File 3201 represents significant, comprehensive, and positive change. We strongly recommend that you fully support all of the policy language in the 2020 Increased Teachers of Color Act. Thank you for your leadership in doing what is right for all students in the state of Minnesota.
I want to thank you all for your leadership, too. I don't think it would have gotten this far without the council's help, so thank you. Representative Kunesh-Budde, I think you have a group of youths here that would like to speak as well, if you want to have them come forward, and then just make sure that you state your name for the record before you talk, and that would be great.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have Adria Quinn, Hala Henderson, and DeAnthony Acon here.
Wonderful to see the Minnesota Youth Council here again. You guys are becoming fixtures, which is awesome. So why don't you go ahead and start?
Thank you, Chair Joachim and committee. My name is Audrey Arquin, and I'm a sophomore at Central High School here in St. Paul, as well as a representative of District 4 on the Minnesota Youth Council. For elementary school, I went to Groveland Park Elementary in St. Paul, a school that is almost 60% students of color. Now at Central High School, a school that is almost 70% students of color. In my almost 10 years of public education, I've had only one teacher of color. There has always been a disconnect between our student body and the makeup of our teachers. Not having teachers of color hurts everyone, but it specifically hurts students of color. As a student of color, especially when I was young, I didn't have the same mentorship from teachers of color as I did from white teachers. I had wonderful teachers through kindergarten and second grade, but I didn't really open my eyes more until I had my first teacher of color in third grade. I specifically remember one lesson that was taught that year about the agricultural revolution. We learned about how they first domesticated seeds in the Indus River valleys in Pakistan. I remember my face lighting up when I was able to finally draw the connection that these faces we're seeing are the same people that I FaceTime every night, my family back home in India. These new perspectives that are taught by teachers of color, that was only one lesson that we learned that day in class. However, I believe that all students of color that were in my class that year can pinpoint one lesson that they learned that significantly impacted their learning and allowed them to have more connections. The new perspectives taught by a teacher of color show the importance of not only increasing teachers of color, but also adapting curriculums in schools. I don't think I would have been able to grow as much as a learner if I didn't have a teacher that taught me not just about the cultures of white European and American culture, but about cultures around the world. And I don't think I would have grown as much if I had had a teacher that didn't look like me. I'm in full support of increasing our teachers of color, and I do believe that it will bring an increase, and I do believe that this bill will bring a large increase to the number of teachers of color in our system. However, when I learned that I would be testifying today, I reached out to the same teacher that taught me so many years ago to learn the challenges that teachers of color face in our system today. Through this conversation, I became aware of some of the many issues that our teachers of color are facing today. One of the big problems she highlighted was with administration and their support of teachers of color. As she said, putting up posters of people of color in February, hosting National African American Parent Involvement Day, adorning the entryways with hello in multiple languages does nothing to address the fact that white people are still the primary holders of power in our district. This effort from a mostly white administration comes off as hollow and disingenuous. In talking about the freedom of expression for teachers of color within their classrooms, she also said, teachers of color on a daily basis make subtle changes to who they are authentically. Hair, speech, demeanor, dress, volume level, tone, and emotional response to make white administration, staff, students, parents, and community members comfortable. White staff do not experience this. If a teacher of color cannot show up as their authentic selves in the classroom where they have authority, how can we expect students of color to authentically show up in a class facilitated by a white teacher? We need more teachers of color in our schools. They are vital in all aspects of growth in a school environment. However, we cannot expect our teachers of color to stay in the field and help their students succeed without addressing the systemic issues highlighted above. It is clear to me, and it is clear to many of the teachers, and I hope it becomes clear to this committee, that without fixing the systemic racism that exists within our school systems, we cannot write legislation that allows the success for our parents of color, our teachers of color, and most importantly, our students of color. Thank you. And I yield my time to the chair.
Hi, I'm Valencia Powell. I'm an 11th grade student at HSRA. My school experience has not always been the great school experience, you know, going to school, being able to have a full class of, you know, books for everyone, pencils for everyone, notebooks for everyone. And coming into, you know, going to different schools and actually seeing how teachers teach, it's very different from being in the city and being in the suburbs. I actually did go to a school out in Isani County, and it wasn't what I thought it would be. You don't see as many people of color out there. You don't see as many kids of color out there. I was maybe one in maybe like 14 kids in the school that were black. So it was definitely something that was kind of uncomfortable for me, but I also had to learn to adapt to my surroundings and the things that were being thrown at me that, you know, didn't necessarily make sense, but I had to put myself in their shoes of, okay, this makes sense. And just being able to get through the things that I get through. Going to HSRA, which is actually called the Hip Hop High School of St. Paul, we have a number of black teachers at the school that that are, you know, extraordinary, but most specifically, Haben. She has come here with me, and she has been like my representative in this whole thing. And we actually have another teacher. His name is David Anderson, and he's our art teacher. And speaking a little bit about David, he is somebody that is, you can count on him to do anything for you. When it comes to, you know, being in social issues, being yourself, being, you know, finding education, he is the one to go to. And also when I see that, I also see myself. I also see my mother. I see my dad. I see all kinds of things. So being able to, you know, walk in his shoes and for him to come and tell me, no, I have you, I got you. That's very important to me. So being able to see that I have teachers of color there and being able to see that I can go to school every day and they'll give me a warm welcome, or they'll give me, you know, they'll actually look me in my eyes and say, you know, how are you doing today? Instead of just me sitting at a desk and the teacher asking, you know, everybody, how are you? You know, how's your day? But them actually singling you out and being like, no, are you doing all right today? Is, you know, is there anything going on? Is there anything I can fix for you? So, you know, going back into elementary school, most of my teachers in elementary school were white. And I just remember, you know, having this one teacher, and she would always be so mean. And I'm like, you know, why are you so mean? Like, why is this? Why is that the connection that we have? And so I always just thought about it. Like every time I would go into, you know, a new building, going into middle school. Middle school was, you know, it was tough, but there was things that that made middle school great.
Thank you.
So having, I guess having a black teacher, you know, that can actually look you in your eyes and actually feel your pain. That's what's important to me, and I'm pretty sure that's what's important to you. Important to other kids of color at school, and even, you know, their colleagues, being able to talk to them about issues that they see on the news, you know. And it's, I think that's important, being able to have somebody look you in your eyes and actually ask you, are you okay? Is this what you want to be taught? Is this something that you want to hear? That's for me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I believe you have a group of teachers here too, and I want to make sure we keep on time as well. So we can keep our comments brief. We have one public testifier, and then I'll open it up to questions to the committee.
Yep. We have teachers Adriana Pastor-Diaz from Pika Head Start, Anita Gates from Robbinsdale Schools, and just a little FYI, Anita is my cousin, and Jessica Davis, who is our Teacher of the Year.
Wonderful. Welcome. And just state your name for the record before you speak, and then proceed. Whoever wants to go first.
All right. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members.
Just make sure you pull that microphone a little closer. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Adriana Pastor-Diaz.
and I'm a teacher at Parents and Community Action in Minneapolis. I'm here to tell you my story about my family and I have benefited from Head Start. I was born in Mexico and raised by my grandparents. We struggled with finding food, work, and a safe place to live. I moved to Minnesota in 2005 to find a better life with my husband, my daughter, and a baby on the way. I got a job at a restaurant where one of my coworkers had told me about Head Start. I brought my children to Head Start in 2008. I became involved in volunteer activities when my child's teacher recruited me to start PICA parent training. A workforce developed program offering 96 hours of hands-on classroom training. I started my parent training in 2010 in an infant and toddler room. During my parent training, I learned so much about the development of young children. This experience started my journey into a career in early childhood. I also taught me a young mom, and also taught me as a young mom about the development of my own children. After completing my parent training, I applied to be a parent intern in PICA's intern program, working with infant and toddlers. I worked full-time in an early Head Start classroom, learning what it takes to be a teacher, create lesson plans, and interact with children. During my internship, I attended PICA's CDA, Child Development Associate Program, a national credential early childhood certificate. My credential included completing 120 hours of training, 450 hours of classroom experience, writing a portfolio, and passing the examination. Once completed my CVA and internship, I applied and was hired as an assistant teacher with PICA Head Start. I work in PICA Head Start, Minneapolis Public School, Early Childhood Special Education Collaborative Classroom, a COTA classroom with Head Start and Head Start and Minneapolis Public Schools for children with special needs. While working as an assistant teacher, I graduated from Minneapolis Community and Technical College with an Associate of Applied Science degree in early childhood education. I'm the first in my family to attain a degree in college. Through the PICA Head Start Workforce Development Program, I have successfully completed volunteering, parent training, internship, an assistant teacher position, and recently accepted a lead teacher position. I am very lucky to work in a very diverse program where the staff reflects the children and families, both in culture and language. Having diverse teachers is very important to me. I want my children to be with teachers who look and talk like them. My oldest two children graduated from PICA, and I'm currently having my youngest son at PICA who will be going to kindergarten in the fall. My son is always excited to go to school and love to play with his classmates. He enjoys making friends from many cultures. My life has changed so much for the better. I have never thought I would be where I am, but because of my hard work, my family has benefited both financially and culturally. Head Start gives children and their parents a chance to succeed. At PICA, 48% of 400 staff are current or former Head Start parents. 90% are people of color. This level of diversity is very important. As a teacher of color, I am a role model. I see the impact I have with my children in my classroom. My children have role models at Head Start, and I want that for all the children. This is why I support this bill.
Thank you.
As a teacher of color, and because of the opportunities I was given, I now have the credentials, a full-time job, and a security knowing that I have the skills, the knowledge, and desire to make this world better for children and families.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry, I want to make sure everybody gets a chance to talk. We're running out of time for the allotment we have for this bill. Did you want to add one more thing, or?
I just have to add that my life story is a living proof. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Whoever wants to speak next, just state your name for the record and proceed.
Yes,
Hello, my name is Anita Gates, Two Bear, and I come from a family of teachers, starting with my grandmother, who taught in a one-room schoolhouse in South Dakota. So I was very inspired by her teachings, which is a system of respect. So when I was gaining my experience as a teacher, some districts didn't welcome me too well. I experienced a lot of intimidated and questioning, but I did find a home in Robbinsdale Schools, because their policy is when you walk in the door, you have to welcome that guest teacher in a very respectful way. And so part of the bill to respect teachers and retain teachers is super important, you know. And I know from being a teacher assistant on up to where I'm at now, there are several hundred teachers in Minneapolis and St. Paul that would love to work as Native teachers, but every time there's a budget, you know, every time something happens, there's some reason why they don't get hired, you know. And so I believe that this bill can help develop that relationship with the schools, with the teachers of color, American Indian teachers. And the last thing that I'd like to say is that I'm really enjoying teaching in the class that I'm teaching, because the reading scores are going up, and also I teach Dakota and Ojibwe history in the afternoon. So I'm also licensed in teaching Dakota language. So I'm bringing the history alive for my students. And I think there needs to be that resource. It's an extremely important heritage for our state of Minnesota. And it's also being more and more introduced in the standards. So the next standard is that they want to do an activity with a calendar in Ojibwe and Dakota. And who would better, my team of teachers look to me to produce that calendar for them. And so I'm very pleased and honored to be here and to be a part of this coalition and to talk to all of you. Vidama yaye and mitaku ye o wasi.
Thank you. Go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, members of the committee, my name is Jessica Davis, and as a proud member of Education Minnesota, I am the current Minnesota Teacher of the Year. I have taught high school mathematics since 2006, and I'm in my 11th year of teaching in South St. Paul Secondary. I'm a Minnesota native, the daughter of educators, a graduate of St. Cloud Apollo High School, a Minnesota State University Mankato Maverick, and I hold a teaching license and master's degree from Hamline University. And I have never had a teacher who looks like me. I'm here today to endorse the Increased Teachers of Color Act 2020 to continue to promote the systemic change necessary to address the serious opportunity and achievement gaps that students across our state suffer. Since I did not see people who look like me while growing up and navigating school, teaching was not my first career choice. Despite having a parent who taught in the Avon and Albany school district for 38 years, I set out to become a physician. But I knew after two summers of research and medical internships at Ecolab and the Mayo Clinic that medicine just wasn't for me. So I graduated with a degree that I had no intention on using. And I spent a few years working in the Twin Cities before I realized that I continued to gravitate towards careers in education. I entered graduate school in 2003 so that I could return to the high school environment, this time as a teacher to help others navigate through the system that was ill-equipped to support my own journey. We know the unique obstacles that students of color face have a profound impact on how they experience education. One obstacle is the lack of opportunities for our students to witness the navigation of the educational system, modeled by educators who look like them. Studies show that non-white teachers produce more favorable outcomes for students of color, as we see improved reading and math scores, graduation rates, and increased aspirations to attend college. And teachers of color have positive impacts on white students as well, which contribute to a healthier community with more understanding around racial and social injustices. Learning alongside teachers and students of color help actualize new perspectives and provides opportunities to question assumptions about race, class, and privilege that counterbalance dangerous stereotypes and help neutralize unconscious bias. My work in South St. Paul aims to reposition student agency to the forefront of educational practices through a hashtag Every Voice Matters. It's a movement that has inspired our community to lean into the difficult task of confronting the shortfalls of our current system and its impacts on our most underserved and misunderstood students. Equity and intersectional commitment is evidenced by the emergence of our affinity groups, which celebrate and support all students by providing safe spaces for our students of color, women, and our LGBTQ plus populations to share their unique perspectives and experiences in education. The groups have given our district new ways to invest in learning and promote tolerance through student-centered learning communities that offer leadership opportunities, public speaking engagements, professional development, and volunteering and mentoring within the community. Our students have inspired organizations around the metro to celebrate the power of student action, earning awards for their commitment to their own education. And I am humbled to advise the motivated student leaders of our Black Pride organization through defining moments of their educational careers. In pursuit of an equitable education for all, my purpose remains to serve as a role model for my students and find ways to continually provide access and opportunity. We know that students of color are more likely to pursue careers in fields that they can imagine themselves in. And in South St. Paul, we work to connect and engage our students with professionals who look like them. The district's student-led organizations collaborate on an annual Professionals of Color Career Panel, now in its fifth iteration, to connect students and families with a panel of professionals of color from throughout the metro area. The career panel allows students and families to engage in dialogue around the experiences of being a person of color within various professional settings, the obstacles that are encountered, and how they have overcome those obstacles to experience success. The event is designed to disrupt negative stereotypes and reveal the true depth of possibilities that are out there for all of our students. And it only occurs to us now that we have yet to invite a teacher as a panelist. It's concerning that students, especially those of color, don't readily consider teaching as a future career. The question, why not, must be asked. The answer must be addressed. Representation matters. When we take deliberate steps towards developing and hiring educators that reflect the diversity of our students and work in ways that support and retain these educators, our districts will be more equipped to promote achievement. We must choose to take this work on deliberately and intentionally, because that is when we change our communities and that is when we change the world. Thank you for supporting this bill.
Thank you so much. I know we have one public testifier signed up. I don't know if I'll let you come down. We just have like 1 minute before we have to move on to questions from members. So members, if you just want to let Alyssa or Megan know that you want to speak or I have a question. Sir, could you please state your name for the record and please keep it to under 2 minutes.
My name is David Goble. I am actually fourth generation for educators. And similar to my colleague back here, one of my great-grandmothers was a teacher in one-room schoolhouse on the Dakotas. This is back when you had sod houses. I've been looking over your proposed bill, and I've seen the changes. And there's a few things that I would love to see somebody address. One being, who decides on what culture in regards to natives? But then the Ojibwe nations, we have several bands. Each band has its own dialect. So which one are we going to teach? Are we going to teach the Mille Lacs, Red Lake, White Earth? They're all different. And also, I noticed in part of this on section 2, number 5, mentioned something about the case of teaching. And I said it's not the problem, rather it's how natives are not taught in ways that they personally can deal with. I don't know if anybody has actually spent time with the native population, but trust me, there's a difference between trying to teach a bunch of white kids that are being squirrely and a bunch of native kids. We learn different. We don't handle having to be stuck in four walls. It just doesn't work right. Something needs to change with that, but it won't because we're being lumped in with everybody else. Another thing that I had issues with, I know there's several teachers on the committee. I know you've probably gone through the MTLE. I'd like you to try and figure out how a native up in Red Lake is going to pass an MTLE test, especially when the graduation rate, I don't know if it's improved any, but I think it was under 60% at one time. And there's kids that just simply disappear. We don't know where they go. So if you go to any of the reservations right now and you ask yourself, which one of these students is going to be a teacher? How many do you think are going to raise their hands and say, yeah, I want to be one? And then they get into college and they get to this test and they can't pass it. Doesn't matter how much money is tossed into it. Doesn't matter how much time is put into it. If you can't pass the test, you can't be in the teacher program. The same thing applies with the GRE. They're stacked. Pearson made it that way. They're designed to be for affluent individuals, not for minority, especially not for native. You go up to places up
Mr.
around
Gobel,
War Road.
We're going a little far off field of the bill. I'm going to let the testifier answer a few of your questions. Thank you for your testimony, and if you want to provide any more written testimony to the members, I can make sure that we get it. So, Representative Kunesh-Bodin.
Well, I'd like to once again thank all of you for listening, for understanding the significance of this bill. It's a comprehensive bill. It's something that we are working on over time, and I would ask that you would give the support that we need to move this legislation along to ensure that we are increasing our teachers of color in Minnesota.
Thank you. Members, questions? I have Representative Erdahl, Erickson, and then Grunhagen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I am a co-author of this bill and in support of it. Just one question. Studies have shown that children of color learn better, apparently, from teachers of color. My question is, do white children learn at the same level from teachers of color or white teachers? Does anyone know an answer to that?
Madam Chair. I personally do not have a number for you, but I guess I would think back to when I first started my teaching career. I taught in a school that was predominantly kids of color, and I was fortunate to have a woman in my classroom who was a reading specialist, and she became my unofficial mentor.
And I can tell you that without her guidance, without her perspective, without her there to listen to how I was preparing lessons or delivering lessons and then giving me suggestions on how to better apply those to the diverse community, I would not be the teacher that I am. So while I'm sure that I'm quite confident that white kids learn just as well, if not better, from teachers of color, I know that I appreciate that opportunity as a professional myself.
And I think Ms. Davis had something to add, or?
I just have resources to answer that question, written testimony.
Okay, so this is sort of an annotated answer to that, so we will pass that out for you. And if I can find that information, Representative, I'll get it to you.
Yeah, we'll make sure that we get that sent out to everybody, too. Representative Rudolph, did you have a follow-up question?
No, thank you. I appreciate the answer and the fact that maybe there is some annotated material that would be helpful for the whole committee with that.
Great. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kunesh-Padin, Section 4 on tests, and since we just had Mr. Goebel talk about tests, I'm wondering in a paragraph D where the untimed tests are referred to, is Pelsby going to allow the SAT and the ACT, which can be used, you know, for these tests to be untimed? Do you know that answer? And are they also going to... Or who's going to provide for waiving the test fees for those? Because that's also in this paragraph D, that the board would require the exam vendor to provide other equitable opportunities, including waiving test fees. So how's that going to be taken care of? Does that need to be added as a funding source for Pelsby or not? Would you comment on that, please?
Representative Kunesh-Padin, I see Mr. Paulski is coming down. Just want to state your name for the record. And
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, the testing company that Pelsby contracts with would need to provide the resources and untimed opportunities for the exam. So it would be on the testing company that the state contracts with to provide these testing exams to candidates.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson, follow up.
What in instances of taking the SAT or the ACT, will they be untimed?
No.
Mr.
It would, Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, this would not affect the SAT or ACT. It would affect the skills exams, the NES skills exams, the content exams, MTLE content exams, as well as the MTLE pedagogy exams.
Madam Chair, the ACT and the SAT, though, can be used in place of those.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, you are correct.
I think we might have, thank you, Madam Chair, some question about that. I have another question. Do you know, Representative Kunesh-Padin, based on what we discussed last year about ensuring that our teachers of color are allowed to stay in the classrooms where they have the best fit, other than being, because of contract negotiations, being moved to other classrooms? Do you know any data that's been produced from that discussion we had last year about making sure through the mentoring grants and negotiations that our teachers are getting to stay in the place where they best fit? Do you have any data on that so far?
Representative Kunesh-Padin.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have that data. I don't know that it's been collected yet. Again, there's anecdotal stories that a person could share with you, but I don't think that we have collected that data yet at this point. If we do, we will share that with you.
When Representative Kunesh-Padin, we have a more fiscal stop with education finance, so maybe some of those questions can be answered there. It'd be important to hear.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kunesh-Padin, has the new tier licensing system, has that given any cause for optimism as far as teachers of color?
Representative Kunesh-Padin.
Again, I don't have the data, but from what I understand, it certainly does. It gives opportunity for teachers of color who are experienced in the community in different areas to join the workforce, and then recognizing that this is something that they'd like to continue to do, that they would continue on to their licensure as well.
Thank you. Representative, one quick follow-up, Representative Greenhagen.
Oh, I was just going to say, I've got some percentages, and they seem like they've increased since we passed that new tier system, but I'll leave it at that. Just one additional follow-up, and it kind of it comes from research, but I was a chief negotiator for our union contract when I was on the school board for about 6 years. And one of the concerns, I won't tell you the number of years, but anyway.
16.
Yeah, 16. The, you know, and I'll just read this. It's very brief. The real barrier to increasing the number of teachers of color are often teacher union contracts that prioritize teacher tenure over teacher quality and force new and experienced teachers instead of the more challenging classrooms. And I guess it goes kind of along with Representative Erickson's question. While more experienced teachers use their seniority to move into easier teaching assignment. So I, you know, there's some things in the bill I like, but to me, having been chief negotiator for that many years with certified staff, I think that, you know, does your bill in any way address that area?
Representative Kunesh-Podein, it's a little far afield, and I think we have to remember that about 50% of the state schools actually do not have have their union contracts structured differently, so they're not always looking at just longevity. But Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Certainly, and very exactly to what Madam Chair just spoke about, there are different negotiations recognizing the teaching and the professional experience that teachers such as myself, I've been there for 25 years. I'm at the top of my level in as a library media specialist in my district. I certainly recognize the expertise and the experience that all of those folks bring to me, just as I mentioned with my mentor, Dolores. But it's also important to know that there are there is flexibility within from Pelsby as far as keeping our teachers of color and not having to remove them due to negotiations or contract agreements. So it's good to know that we have those opportunities and that freedom within our school districts to do that.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein. Lots of different pathways. We have Representative Herr, Representative Hassan, and then we're going to move to a vote. And then, members, just to let you know, we're going to do a little switch on the agenda here. We're going to have Representative Becker Finn's bill come up next, and then we're going to have the Reimagine folks play cleanup, and then we're going to remove my bill and the ATSIS bill because we are running a little bit late, and I want to be respectful of folks' time, and we'll push that. So still want to keep on track, though. So Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Kunesh-Podein. This bill is really important, and I really appreciate you bringing this forward. I did just want to say quickly that my daughter had an African-American teacher her seventh grade year, and it was the first time that she'd ever heard history taught from a different perspective. And I remember the day she came home, and I'm not sure if I've told this story in this committee before, but okay. The day that she came home, I have told it. She did tell me that she was almost a little bit afraid that somebody had been bold enough to tell her what history was really like. I tell that story because I realized that the impact that he made on her and her ability to learn and what it was that she wanted to explore. Because then when she left that environment, I noticed the difference in her learning and how teachers were viewing her and her ability to actually excel. And then I actually saw her performance decrease. And I was just curious as to if we have data that shows at what level of education is has the greatest impact or long-term impact when a child of color has a teacher of color in the classroom. Or is it, you know, are there certain points that are more critical, or is that throughout the entire K through 12 to have that sort of representation? Because that might be difficult for us to achieve with the amount of that we've been deciding we want to fund this with. That might be challenging to achieve, right?
Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you, Representative. That is a really good question, and I wish I had that data at my fingertips, but I have a feeling that perhaps Mr. Spies here could answer that and speak to it a little bit better.
Mr. Spies.
Madam Chair, Representative, the most compelling data is regarding African-American children in elementary school having at least one black teacher. And the gains that they face as a result of that. But there is definitely positive effects at all age levels, and especially in middle grades and high school. Middle grades, when identities is forming, is crucial, and high school is when students are considering what happens after high school and how they enter the adult world. All are very important.
Thank you, Representative Sun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make a comment. I don't have a question. I want to thank Representative Kunesh Pudin for this bill. For a state that is the second worst, has the second worst disparities in the nation, this is one step closer to home. I want to thank all the testifiers. Your testimony was bold, it was beautiful, and it's what we really need. We need children to be taught in a way that they can learn. We want to make sure that every child in Minnesota has a pathway to successful life. And this might be one of the things that we need to do, but we have a long ways to go. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Kunesh Pudin, closing comments, then we'll move to a vote.
Once again, I just would like you to ask for your support, ensuring that we are bringing in a well-diverse work group within our communities and within our schools, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, and I want to thank all the testifiers for being here today. Sorry, it was a little rushed. I renew the motion that House File 3201 as amended be re-referred to the Education Finance Division. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? The motion prevails. House File 3201 as amended is re-referred to the Education Finance Division. So, members, we're going to quickly have Representative Becker Finn's bill before us. And this is House File 3065. Representative Jordan, will you move House File 3065 be referred to the Education Finance Division? So moved. Thank you. So we have House File 3065 before us. Welcome to the committee. Having a little bit of shuffling here. We'll get testifiers up at the table. Representative Becker Finn, would you like to briefly explain your bill, and then we'll move to your testifiers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just making sure the interpreters are set up so everyone can hear what's going on today.
And pull the mic just a little bit closer. There you go.
So House File 3065 seems like a simple bill, but we really went through a lot to get here. This is the Nathanson family. Dove here is a student who attends school in my district, and he has not been able to access interpreting services that allow him to reach his full potential. And so I'm going to let him explain further, but I did essentially, a lot of folks may not realize that ASL interpreting and a certified deaf interpreter are two different things. And so this kind of addresses that oversight in statute. And with that, I will let Dove go forward with his testimony.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, my name is Dove Nathanson. Okay. I'm an eighth grader. I'm deaf, and ASL is my native language. I've gone through years of being denied equitable access to my education because school districts said that there was no legal recognition of certified deaf interpreters within K-12 systems and the services they provide. Certified deaf interpreters are trained linguistic and cultural experts that work with deaf and hard of hearing people to ensure equitable access. My parents helped me advocate to get them for a long while, but we often face the stone wall of an excuse pointing that they needed to be legally recognized within the K-12 interpreting statute in order to be made available to deaf and hard of hearing students. Being denied the support that could be provided caused me to unnecessarily struggle academically and contributed to my delays in the educational process. The solution to the problem seemed to be a simple enough fix the statute. So our family and friends have advocated for this necessary change for several years now, working with Minnesota Department of Education and Minnesota Commission of Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing on this. I want to thank my representative, Jamie Becker Finn, for her commitment to making sure every deaf and hard of hearing student is afforded their right to an accessible education and bringing this bill forth. I request that you pass this bill so that this excuse can no longer be used to deny access for kids like me anymore. I need full language access for my education and my future.
Thank you so much. Representative Beckerfin, did you have any additional testifiers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have, we did a lot of work in the interim with a lot of people in a small space in the state office building from the Department of Education as well as the Commission on Deaf and Hard of Hearing. They are here today. I don't know if we need them to testify, they can, but they are in support of this bill, and we've been working together for a very long time to get to this point to make sure kids like Dove can access their education.
Thank you so much. So they're just here for a technical. Is there anybody in the audience that wishes to testify in this? I don't think anybody signed up. Then I would like to go to member questions. Members, does anybody have any questions? Seeing none, Representative Becker Finn. I've got to get to the right spot in my list here. Representative Jordan renews her motion that House File 3065 be re-referred to the Education Finance Division. Any further discussion of the motion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? The motion prevails. House File 3065 is re-referred to Education Finance Division, and thank you for your persistence and Dove. Good luck in school.
Thank you very much.
And now we have the folks that have put together a very thorough report that I highly recommend folks read. I've been working my way through it. I know we have some handouts from the pages. And I know one of your testifiers has to leave by 4. So I will let you decide how you do want to do the presentation. Folks, this is on the Reimagine Education work that our superintendents have been working on with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, a few different foundations, the U of M, and they're here today to present the report. And for some questions we may have. So why don't you go ahead and state your name for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christine Tucci Osorio, and I'm the superintendent for North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale District 622. I'll let my colleagues introduce themselves, and then we'll just jump right in.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Law. I'm the superintendent from the Anoka-Hennepin School District.
Michael Rodriguez, Associate Dean of the College of Education and Human Development at the University of Minnesota, and proud graduate of the Maplewood Middle School a few years before Christine was there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great. Go ahead.
Okay.
Proceed. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. We're going to go ahead and jump right into it. I'm going to just give you a short background about how this Reimagine Minnesota project got started. And then my colleagues are going to fill in. Superintendent Law is going to tell us a little bit more about what has happened since our first year of work together. And then Dr. Rodriguez is going to talk a little about our more recent collaboration with the University of Minnesota around this same topic. So just to get started, Reimagine Minnesota is a project that came about back in 2017. Actually, conversations began in late 2016 among area superintendents in the metropolitan area, largely under the umbrella of AMSD, our Association of Metropolitan School Districts. You may recall that back in 2015, there was a very significant lawsuit filed in the state of Minnesota, Cruz Guzman versus the state of Minnesota. I'm sure you've probably all been a little familiar with it. And this lawsuit is a collective lawsuit brought together by a couple of nonprofits and a number of families against the state of Minnesota, arguing that there has been intentional segregation of schools in the state of Minnesota, or lack of effort to monitor the segregation of schools that are happening in Minnesota. When that lawsuit got filed, a number of superintendents got together and began chatting about, first of all, just the background on that lawsuit and how it came about, and then also possibly looking at what are we going to start to do if we really are going to have an impact on closing our achievement gaps or opportunity gaps inside the state of Minnesota and our racialized opportunity gaps. What are some things we could start doing to get ahead of this work? We don't need to wait until there's a lawsuit for us to decide that the courts are going to tell us we need to do some better work for our students and our families and our communities. And so this conversation began early late 2016. In early 2017,
we came together about 50 different school districts, superintendents and school board members. We worked under the facilitation of Paula Forbes and Dario Otero, who helped us organize a collective communication with the community. One thing we thought is that we have to, if we want to know how we can serve our community, our students, our families better, we need to ask them. And so we had these amazing World Cafes that got put together. A World Cafe is basically an open forum. There's different conversations at each table, and people rotate through the room to give their shared input and voice to whatever conversation items we had. And we had some key questions out there about how do you view our school districts, how we could do a better job closing that opportunity gap, what are some things we're not doing well, what are some things we could be improving upon, and how could our community help us collaborate better in these areas. We brought together in 12 different events around the entire metropolitan area, over 3,000 community voices contributed to what they thought was working well and not working well. We had high school student facilitators at each and every one of those conversations, and so we really gathered some really interesting collective voice from our community. The result of that is a roadmap for action that we have put together that includes 9 strategies. I believe you all have a handout of those 9 strategies and the handout that goes along with our Reimagine History. Part of what's really interesting is that those 9 strategies emerged from basically the 9 buckets or categories of feedback we gathered from our community constituents. We've often said this was not a research document in terms of somebody sat in a room and wrote it. This is collecting community voices and organizing those community voices into some themes that we heard repeatedly throughout our World Cafe conversations. And at that time, we now had 50 school districts, some really interesting feedback from our community, and then we decided, what are we going to start to do about it? You can see from our 9 strategies that are there, cultural competence, recruitment and retention of diverse leaders, building community bridges, personalizing education, developing student voice and building upon that, shared understanding of what it actually means to lead equity in our school systems. In cultural inclusivity, how do we do a better job of making sure we have teachers who are trained in culturally relevant teaching strategies, and what does our curriculum look like that we're really including diverse perspectives in the materials and the information we're teaching? Adult behaviors, how do we manage adult behaviors that get in the way of our ability to make systemic change? And then finally, statewide funding, and how are we going to try to advocate better for some of those areas that are needed to do the work we need to do to follow up on those concerns and ideas that were brought forth by our community. With that, I'm going to just pass it really quickly to Superintendent Law. He's going to tell you a little bit about the work we've done in the last 2 years in this area, and then we'll hear from Dr. Rodriguez.
Thank you, Superintendent. Oh,
yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee. First of all, I have to give a shout out to Hamline University. I am the second licensed math major to sit in this chair today. The other one is a teacher of the year, so I'm not going to take that, but a very proud day for Hamline today. During the last 2 years, we have worked hard to get all of those school districts to share what's been working across our system. So we've held events where best practice could be shared. The Minneapolis Public School shared their successes and failures with recruitment and retention. Specifically, you heard a lot about the bill for teachers of color, which I think is, we're fully in support of that. But we had a year ago, Minneapolis Public Schools shared the great success they have bringing teachers of color into the system and the challenges that they have keeping them in the system. And what lessons can we learn from that? Earlier this year, we had a conversation about building community bridges. And again, multiple school districts, South St. Paul, Minneapolis Public Schools, and others shared how they successfully engaged a more diverse community and connecting with the school system, where we actually filled the room and had people from across the state Skyping in saying, how can we do a better job meeting our community needs? The best part about all of this work is it's voluntary. We're not paying, typically we're not paying a consultant to come tell us how to do it. We're asking, what are people doing around the metro that are getting the results that we want and getting those changes? So we're focusing on the kinds of strategies you see in front of you. How do we build cultural competence within our system for our students, for our staff? How do we make our program meet state standards and reflect the students that are in our school system? And the best part about this, in the last year, we've started to measure how we're impacting student outcomes. We're proud here to say that these two superintendents are two of the top three in the metro in schools that beat the odds. As a matter of fact, I'm one of those people. I have my 3 principals testifying in the Senate starting at 4:05. because we have the highest percentage of schools that beat the odds in reading and math in the metro, the two of us in one other school district. So we're not just talking about strategies, we're talking about results. Closing achievement gap, or closing graduation gaps between white students and students of color. We're measuring all of those things, increasing participation in rigorous coursework, increasing college credit in our systems. Our next level of training that we have in the works this year is training for school board members about making sure school board members can address these complex issues in communities that don't always understand equity, and they see equity as someone has to lose in order for other students to win, and empowering school board members to say when we get better results for everybody, there doesn't have to be losers in a system. The fear that people build in that causes boards to be cautious to do the right thing. We've got 20 years of stagnant gaps between student performance that's unacceptable, and when boards try to venture into this, the community responds unsure, like what are my students going to lose as this change happens? So we're trying to empower school board members. That's our next step in the next few months on that. We'll continue to cycle through these strategies to make sure that the best things that are happening in the metro and around the state are shared. Both Christine and I have visited in the southeast and the northwest across the state talking about all the other superintendents, how these strategies might work for them. I'll turn it over to Dr. Rodriguez from the University of Minnesota. We were thrilled when the University of Minnesota partnered with us and did some research and actually found out what our community was telling us to do was based on research and good for students.
Superintendent Law, thank you. My son's enjoying his student teaching up at Northdale Middle School.
Go
and Superintendent Tutsiario, my parents both graduated from Maplewood, and my sister-in-law teaches there, and she loves it. So thank you.
I'm going to take leave to run to the other.
Got it. No problem.
As he's about to. Oh, go ahead.
Representative Scott?
Thank you. Before Superintendent Law leaves, I just want you to know not only did the Teacher of the Year sit in that chair, but this is the Superintendent of the Year.
Oh, thank you.
That's what I was just about to say as well.
It's a proud year for Hamlin University. Thank you very much, Representative Scott. Yeah.
Thank you. And Dr. Law?
Can I go sit in that chair?
Legislator of the Year.
Civics Guy of the Year. Thank you.
Dr. Law, proceed.
Thank you. Oh, there goes Law right there.
Rodriguez.
Oh, sorry.
Michael Tucker Rodriguez.
It's been a long day. I haven't had enough coffee. Thank you.
Committee. Yeah, I'm really happy to be here. And in the spirit of full disclosure, this area is a big part of my Engaged scholarship, part of my job at the University of Minnesota. But it's also personal to me. I'm a fifth generation Minnesotan and the first in the family to go to college.
Wow.
And so my son just finished up school in St. Paul schools, and I care about the students that we currently have in our care and all the generations to come. This started for me by a call from R.T. Ryback. R.T. Ryback is a champion of educational equity, now CEO of Minneapolis Foundation. He got a call from our Attorney General, Ellison, who was concerned about this lawsuit because the lawsuit is likely going to change in some way the delivery of public education in the metropolitan area. And it's going to be more than just how we deliver education, but we're going to have to address what we do in those classrooms and in those school buildings. So RT called me and said, what do we know about the evidence, and have you heard of Reimagine Minnesota? And I said, actually, I have heard of Reimagine Minnesota, and I'm a big fan. It's really interesting because that was generated through communication with communities, and it wasn't a research study. So RT said, can we deepen that? Can we broaden it? Can we expand it? And so we pulled together 12 scholars. These are engaged scholars who are working in Minnesota schools, majority of women, majority of faculty of color. And we brought together the research evidence and best practice evidence underneath those action strategies. And so when we looked at that, we said, this is a roadmap that's taking us somewhere. Let's take a deep dive in the research evidence. And that's what we tried to pull together. What you have in front of you is an 8-page summary of a 100-page report. On the back side is a link to the full research-based evidence report for that. We did add two areas of concern, and I just want to say something really quickly about the two areas we added. One was around implementation science. There is a science around implementation, and we can do the best we can at writing state statutes and regulations and write nice reports and put them on our desk. But unless we actively manage implementation, little is likely to change. And so we have a piece in there about what it takes to actively manage. We have to actively manage this work. The second part that we added was around social emotional learning. And we heard a lot of this from the earlier testimony today. schools focus on cognitive development, but we know that learning is a social activity. The young people in our care are developing cognitively, but they're also developing identities, and they're developing social identities and personal identities and cultural identities. These are intertwined. They co-occur. We cannot be successful with one if we ignore the other. And so schools around Minnesota are really doing deep dives, and MDE has provided guidance around social emotional learning for Minnesota schools. That MDE guidance has now become national models. And so other states are looking at the guidance that MDE has prepared around this. And quite frankly, a lot of districts are using the Minnesota Student Survey to monitor social and emotional skills of their students, because the Minnesota Student Survey now contains measures from the Great Search Institute in Minneapolis, which is the developer of the Developmental Asset Framework, an asset-oriented perspective of positive youth development. We have these measures in the Minnesota Student Survey, and 85% of schools participate in that. So we're very busy providing that information back to schools to enhance that piece. So we were really excited to be able to build on something that superintendents and communities had created and then really bring depth to it. We're trying to work together now to figure out how do we make use of what we've learned in implementation science to really actively manage this work.
Thank you, Dr. Rodriguez. And members, you might remember we had Search Institute come in last session for one of our hearings with the Bar Center as well to talk about exactly that, building assets in kids. So Dr. Tucio Osorio.
Yes, if I could just add one more thing, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Since the time that this project came about, these nine strategies were created in our roadmap for action. Since that time, we have been meeting as a superintendent group across the metropolitan area, having many conferences around lots of different topics. So we've had strategy sessions, and we've said, today we're going to talk about recruiting and retaining diverse staff. Everybody come together, and let's share what is working. We've had other topics. We had a whole session around changing adult behaviors, and we brought together some leaders from schools all around the metro to talk about some things they'd done that actually had started to change adult behaviors. And so it's been one strategy conference after another amongst ourselves to really take a look at who's doing each piece of this well, because nobody's doing everything well, and how do we learn from that. The other thing I'll just add is that David Law, who just left the room here, he and I have been hosting some Friday afternoon planning sessions, which are basically open to all of our metropolitan area superintendents, and they are completely optional. And people come. We do it once a month on a Friday afternoon late in the day, and our superintendents across the entire metropolitan area show up every single month, and it's been growing. And what's so fascinating is that I can't think of another time where 3 years after we do a project, we're still really, really engaged and working together and learning from each other. So I think that's one of the interesting synergy pieces about all this. On December 5th, we had a very large conference, and Dr. Rodriguez was our keynote speaker, where we actually unveiled the report that was done by the University of Minnesota. But we had in the room all of the local foundations, the Minneapolis Foundation, St. Paul Foundation, Minnesota Foundation. We had nonprofits. We had all the school districts in the entire metropolitan area, many elected officials. And it was really a call to action to say, okay, let's keep doing this and get better at it so that we can learn from each other. And it's been a real synergy that's been blossoming. I just want to add one last thing. In October, we had a very, very large student conference, a student voice conference. We had over 1,500 students from around the entire metropolitan area come together at the Minneapolis Convention Center under the umbrella of Reimagine Minnesota to once again hear their voices and ideas in an open court technology method. And the outcome was amazing, and surprisingly, not surprisingly, really came back around these same areas that were identified 3 years earlier when we first did some community conversations. So we'd love to share more details about that if you want to look at that information as well.
Thank you so much. Members, I know that was a lot to digest really quickly. The link to the report is super helpful, and I really highly recommend the read. We have some time now that we move bills, about 10, 15 minutes for questions. So, members, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thanks for your presentation. I was a school board member for 16 years, okay? So I know you mean well, but I've been through outcome-based education, profile learning, Goals 2000, Race to the Top, which I renamed Race Off an Academic and Financial Cliff. I've heard it all. And we have to address this achievement gap. We need minority students, and education is a big part of it, to be equipped academically to be able to get into the middle class, mm-hmm. okay? Now, I also did jail ministry for 13 years. I wasn't in jail, but I did jail ministry.
Yep.
And when you go around and read in jail, guess what happens? They can't read a lot of them, mm-hmm. okay, very well. So some, a lot of them have a high school degree, 12 years, and they can't read. Mm-hmm. I don't know why we're giving them the degree. We're failing them. So, you know, I'll just say this. Competition will solve what billions of dollars won't solve. We need opportunity scholarships so that parents can move their children out of failing schools into schools that address the needs of their students. Competition, that's what I live with every day as a business owner, okay? It makes me better. It hurts sometimes. Until you infuse competition, piling billions of dollars onto the same system and rearranging the deck sheets is a waste of time. And you're damaging those minority students' opportunity to experience the middle.
I don't hear a question in there. Did you have a question? So we can move on to other members on the list.
Yeah, why are you doing that? No, no, I'll leave it at that.
Dr. Rodriguez, Dr. Tutsi Osorio, any?
I would just say this. I think that the systems we've had in place of competition have continued to serve the people they are designed to serve. And I think that if we're going to really do a good job of having a high-quality education for all, I'm really passionate personally, and I think many of my colleagues are, about saving public education. If the conversation is going to be about privatization, there's a lot of cities around the country. You can look at Detroit. You can look at St. Louis, Missouri, where they have given up on the public system, and it's become privatized. And what happens is people continue to move further and further out from the center core of the cities, and it becomes a class system. And I really do have concerns. I don't want to become a class system like some developing countries where the only people who have influence and prosperity connected them and connections can get a good education. If we don't invest in actually making sure every school is a really good school, we're having throwaway kids and we're having throwaway programs, and we are at the state of our economic development in the state of Minnesota. We have a shortage of workforce people. We have got to make sure everyone gets a strong education, and it can't just be that you get up and move and keep moving and moving till you find a better school, because if we don't educate all learners, they become burdens to our society too. If you want to just even speak economically, and I'll just say that, and I do believe that public education, specifically urban core public education, has to be rock solid and high standard, because if you don't, you're just immediately decimating the future of public education.
Thank you. Representative Waslick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just noted that when this started in 2016, and that the last piece says this will take years to implement if done correctly and done well. And I'm wondering if you can speak to, you've talked about these sort of meetings that you're having, but if you can speak to how are we going to, I guess, track what's being done? Because I think that we do have some districts who are doing some things well and not other things well. And we can't really wait any longer mm-hmm. to fix these problems. And so I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about how we're actually going to know that these changes are happening.
Sure.
Dr. Osorio.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I will just add that we have amongst ourselves actually started to develop a scorecard that on one side of it, it has qualitative survey response. How well do you think you're doing each of these areas, and how do you self-rate yourself as a school district? The flip side of it has all of the quantitative data. What is the gap in achievement, gaps in achievement, gaps in graduation rates, gaps in attendance, gaps in suspension rates? So it compares. We're just starting this project of taking, how do people self-evaluate their district? Here's some things we're doing really well in terms of implementing these 9 strategies. And then how does that compare to what your actual data shows? Are you closing gaps? Are you having success in different areas? And I will tell you, we're taking close looks at who has specific success. Who's actually retaining and recruiting and retaining diverse staff, and who's not doing that well? And I'll tell you, the retain part is incredibly important. You have to look at the data. And we are looking at the data and going, who's doing this well and how can we learn from them? Who has really reduced suspension rates well and has closed that a gap in terms of discipline disparities? Who's doing that well and how can we learn from them? I'll mention a colleague, Richfield Public Schools, has done a great job in closing that gap. Minneapolis has done a good job of recruiting and retaining diverse staff. Each of us have different gifts and talents we bring, and we're trying to really use our data to study those.
Great. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And are you asserting that the 9 factors that you have in this, if followed, would help to close the achievement gap.
Doctor, is it Tutti Osorio?
Tutti Osorio, yeah. And you can even just say Osorio. I go by just both, either or both. Yep.
Thank you. Well, someone who has a hard name to pronounce, I want to make sure I get it right.
Absolutely. I'm sure you understand that.
So Dr. Tutti Osorio.
Okay.
Osorio.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, I would just like to say the piece of these nine buckets or strategies that came out came out because a community voice said these are the things we need. And to our earlier conversation, they weren't researched out of peer-reviewed research journals on what are the strategies that are going to work. But that's why we actually collaborated with the University of Minnesota to actually check and correlate to see inside of these areas, do they correlate in the peer-reviewed research of areas that where it actually has made a difference in closing gaps. And I will just say, because the focusing on each of these areas, when we have worked on them, we've seen some nice pockets of gains in our different districts. And I think as my colleague David Law and I both said, we both are very proud that we have very high numbers of beating the odds schools as we are focusing wholeheartedly on implementing these nine areas. Do you want to add to that?
Dr. Rodriguez.
Madam Chair, thank you. Yeah, I do want to say that also in the research report, each one of the sections of the research report refers to the other sections because none of these work in isolation.
Right.
And it's a real recognition that the seriousness of the challenge is this integrated systemic inability to move. And so it's everywhere, it's systemic, it's almost impossible to avoid, but all together, these things are really an integrated approach. And that's one of the great things about, once again, this connection between what community says and what the research says. And it was nice that we did it in this order, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Community first.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got Representative Sandell and then Representative Herr. And then I'm sorry, we're almost out of time. I know a lot of people probably have even more questions, but I know you'd be willing to follow up offline if mm-hmm. need be. And I'm sure this is not the first time we're going to see you before our committee. So Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do have a quick question about organization of Reimagine Minnesota. Charter schools were established and discussed back in the 1940s through the American Federation of Teachers, and the idea was that the charters and the district schools would kind of cross pollinate, I guess, good ideas. The material you handed out and the mentions you've made talk about the school district superintendents. Are you including that, the superintendents of charter districts as well? Or organizations such as Education Evolving that's also interested in educational innovation.
Dr. Osorio.
Okay, thank you, Chair, Madams, and members of the board. I will just say, initially, this project began under the umbrella of AMSD, the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, of which we do not have charter schools as a member of that group. So the original group that started this project, they were school districts, comprehensive school districts, public school districts, not including charter schools. In our recent evolution of this work, we've really worked to expand that focus. For example, our student conference that was 1,500 students brought together, we intentionally made sure we had students from our charter schools there and reaching out and building that connection across our charter school network. And so we have really, as this is evolving, made a real conscious effort to try to link to other organizations and charter schools as well as outstate districts in greater Minnesota. We've tried to make those connections as well so that it's not just this tiny little club of school districts that are here working on this, but this becomes a Minnesota conversation. I'm glad you asked that question.
Thank you. Representative Herr. Thank you,
Chair.
Representative Sandell, you didn't. Okay. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick question. So I would hate for anyone to see all these nine recommendations and think that we could fund this on our current budget the way we fund education right now. I'm just curious in your more detailed report, is there more detail as what it would mean for us as a legislature to actually fund our education system so that it can do these things? And I know that we all know very well that we have funded public education, increased that in very small amounts, and that for a 10-year period, we didn't have any increases and we couldn't keep up with inflation. And so I just want to make sure that we understand as legislators that if we want to see outcomes from this, that we actually fund it appropriately as well. So is there any recommendations on what it would mean to actually fully fund these recommendations?
Dr. Osorio.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I will say there's not a specific funding ask currently in this umbrella of Reimagine Minnesota superintendents and districts that are connected here. I will say that we currently have a state school task force to study school finance in the state of Minnesota, and I happen to be one of the co-chairs of that committee. And I will tell you that every month we're looking at different elements, and we speak about systemic leadership. One of the things about systems is that everybody has their own view of the system, but nobody can see the whole system at one time. So that task force is really working right now to get different perspectives every month onto the same issues. And so we had an entire month dedicated to what does it cost to close the funding or achievement gap, opportunity gap. We brought in folks from outstate Minnesota, metropolitan school districts to kind of look at the cost. Right now, we don't have a specific funding request attached to this, but I will say that there's a lot of involvement connected to our state task force on school funding to try to get those perspectives from many different organizations at the table to think about what are some of those, if we were to prioritize, what are those things that we'd be prioritizing in terms of this. I think it's going to be a menu of things, but we also understand you can't just shake a money tree and say we're just going to keep throwing money at something without a really clear outcome for that. So we're trying to really be clear about that.
Dr. Rodriguez, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Herr, I really appreciate the question. Schools are really good at trying new things, and we adopt all kinds of practices and curriculum and resources, and we just put more and more and more on. Mm-hmm. What we're not so good at is dropping things that aren't working. Mm-hmm. And so I think a big part of this is going to be a reevaluation of our priorities and our resource allocation. And so when I work with schools, I really try to focus on that issue. And I think a lot of this is simply a reorientation of current behaviors, especially around the adult behavior. A lot of the really core, really meaty stuff in here is simply a reorientation mm-hmm. of priorities.
Mm-hmm. I once again want to thank you both, and please bring back to all your groups and all the work you're doing, that how much we appreciate that. And I, like I said before, I'm sure this is not the last time we will have you here. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And members, quick announcements. Remember, next Tuesday, February 25th, we're actually meeting at 9:45 a.m. in Room 5. I know it's not our usual time, but we're going to have our discussion with District 287 and the work they're doing on trauma-informed education. And then we'll meet at a regular time on Wednesday, February 26th. And then we'll also be meeting on Friday, February 28th at 9 a.m., and stuff will be posted very soon. Meeting is adjourned.